All right, Alexander, let's talk about Volkswagen and the problems that the German car manufacturer is having. Deindustrialization looks like it's hitting Volkswagen as well as intense competition from China. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, just to remind everybody that back in February 2022, when Germany announced that it was suspending operations of Nord Stream 2, we said that Germany was going to find itself very soon, very quickly, in a process of deindustrialization. That is exactly what has happened. This announcement from Volkswagen that they're going to start sacking 100,000 of their employees around the world, not just in Germany, I should say. But this is going to bring the fact that deindustrialization is taking place in Germany. It's going to bring it home to the German people like nothing else that has happened up to this moment. And it is proving enormously controversial and is causing a lot of angst in Germany. Now, I think before we proceed, just a few things to say about how important the car industry in Germany is, and Volkswagen's absolutely central importance in it. Germany was the place, the country where they invented the internal combustion engine. Germany, in other words, launched modern car manufacturing. It has been Germany's most iconic industry, certainly since the end of the Second World War. And it's not just an industry that puts together cars. I mean, there is an enormous back heartland, if you like, of German industrial companies, small family businesses, Mittelstand businesses that act as component suppliers and are there forming part of the supply chain that goes to make German cars. So this is a very important industry. It is also very psychologically important to the Germans. And when the Germans think of their country as a major exporter, it is first and foremost as an exporter of what Germans for a very long time have assumed are the world's best cars. And Volkswagen is one of the big three. In fact, it is one of the three German companies that makes cars. The biggest, of course, is Daimler-Benz. The second is Volkswagen. The third, which is much smaller, is BMW, which, by the way, in terms of the German car industry, is a relatively new company. I mean, it really became significant as a car manufacturer, volume car manufacturer, in the late 1960s. So this is a huge shock, and it just brings home at a particularly delicate political moment in Germany the extent of the decline. Now, the German media, the German political class are all saying that this is because of competition from China. This is now the new narrative. And the two of us, as people from the Greek world, will find some of the arguments and, if you like, excuses that are coming up in Germany now, explaining this decline of Volkswagen, really very interesting. It's said that China is over-focused on exports, that China engages in unfair competition, that the way the Chinese are running an excessively big current account surplus. Just a few years ago, many people in Europe were making exactly the same criticisms of the Germans, and the Germans used to respond by saying that all that people were saying is that Germany and its industries were too efficient. Now that, if you like, the boot is on the other foot, and it's Germany's industries that are in decline, the Germans are making exactly the same set of arguments that used to be made against them, and which they always responded very negatively to. The reality about Germany is that there are two causes to this problem. The first is an underlying one, which we have discussed in many programs, going back many years, since long before the SMO and all of that began, during the reign of Angela Merkel. The fact that Germany was stagnating, that behind the facade of industrial and manufacturing excellence, Germany was falling behind in new technologies. Its industries were basically locked into the technological world of the 1960s and 1970s, and that they weren't keeping up with technological developments in the United States and increasingly in China. And we see that with Volkswagen. Volkswagen has never really got on top of the electric cars, which are now coming from China. It's never really developed proper rivals to those. But the single event over recent years, which has triggered this crisis, not just for Volkswagen and the German car industry, but for German industry as a whole, is what we identified as the problem back in February 2022. The decision by the German government to stop imports of cheap energy from Russia. From that moment, German competitiveness went away, and because of the underlying stagnation, technological stagnation and immobilism, the vulnerabilities of the German industrial system, including its car industry, became immediately exposed. So that is what we're seeing. Now, there is still massive denial about the second factor in Germany, but I said this is coming at a particularly sensitive moment politically. Friedrich Merz, the German Chancellor, it's clear that he has his industrial strategy, if you can dignify it by that name, of converting German car factories to producing weapons, that isn't succeeding and won't succeed, that all it is doing is racking up debt. There is increasing unpopularity towards Merz, specifically in Germany. The German political class, the CDU, now do seem to be looking for an alternative leader, which is extraordinary in a country like Germany, where chancellors remain in office usually for decades. And it's likely that before long we will get a new German chancellor. But exactly as we see in Britain, the new chancellor will be very similar to the old chancellor. There is no real sign that policy in Germany is going to change.
He will be appointed, installed.
He'll be appointed, installed. Yeah. He's going to be installed by, you know, the various factions within the CDU, within which, by the way, Merz himself was never especially popular. And there will be one individual who we need to keep a very careful eye on and who will probably want to play an important role behind the scenes, who is, of course, Merz's predecessor, Angela Merkel. Wait and see. It's very likely that she will be coming back, not obviously as chancellor, but as the kingmaker of whoever succeeds Merz.
So what happened to the whole converting Volkswagen into a drone manufacturing facility? What happened to all of that? Well, that's what Merz was telling us 6 months ago, that all is okay. No worries. We're just going to make drones and tanks and other military things.
Well, it is going nowhere. We've had a whole succession of scandals now affecting the German military industrial system. Rheinmetall was supposed to be supervising a massive program to build destroyers in Dutch shipyards. Of course, that got nowhere. The CEO of Rheinmetall is now in difficulty. Germany as far as I can understand, is not producing any more tanks at the moment. It is spending a lot of money on defense, but it is not successful in producing new weapons. And German industrial companies are not really very interested in producing the kind of cheap, high-volume drones that supposedly are needed on battlefronts today, because these are not cost-effective items for German companies to produce. As we will discuss in a different video, what we have been saying all along has now been confirmed, essentially, by an interesting article in the Financial Times. The drones Ukraine is using are made from Chinese components. They are being screwed together, perhaps in Germany, but they're also to some extent in Ukraine, from imported components that ultimately come from China. Converting car factories into tank and armored vehicle factories is a process that would take at least a decade. It would require significant retraining of the workforce. It would require a completely different set of machine tools. It would require entirely different suppliers. It is a process that takes time. It is not going to help or save Volkswagen now.
What does it matter if they make something or if they don't? I mean, if you're a German elite, if you're a Brussels globalist cool kid, what do you care if you make a drone or not, or if you make a car or not? What you want access to is those big, fat, juicy EU funds.
Yes.
And in order to get access to those funds, all you have to say is we're doing something with Ukraine. Sign a contract, create a deal where you're doing a joint venture with Ukraine. Give Zelensky his cut, 10% for the big guy. And that's it. You get access to Ursula's funds. That's pretty much the requirement that she's placed on the big funds, the Peace Fund and the START. I think it's called the START Fund or whatever. She puts these snazzy names on all of these funds, which has tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions of euros in them. And that's what you have to do. Just say we're in a joint venture with this company in Ukraine, with the Ukraine government. Yeah, things are going to be manufactured in Germany eventually. But then you get access to the money, and then the BlackRock finance guys do their thing.
Well, you're absolutely right. And can I just say that years ago, long before you know the crisis in Ukraine began and all sorts of things, you were already pointing out then that Ursula's genius is at creating funds. And that's what she's been doing basically ever since she became president of the European Commission. She has been very, very assiduous in creating funds. Now, there is one thing about Germany which makes Germany different from other countries in Europe. So, I mean, you know, if you're a political class person in France or the Netherlands or in Belgium, yes, you can coast along quite happily with this. You don't really care what happens. You don't even care very much what happens in your own country. But there is one thing that is different about Germany. In fact, there's two things that are different about Germany, but they are interconnected with each other. Firstly, these funds that Ursula is creating are essentially funds made up of German money. Germany is the country that funds the European Union. I mean, it is by far the biggest economy. It is the country that has the biggest financial resources by far. So it is the Germans, ultimately, who are putting up all of this money. So in Germany, when they look at all this spending, it's not EU spending, EU funds, EU money, as it would be somewhere like, say, Hungary, the Czech Republic, France, Italy, Greece. It is Germans' money. It is German taxpayers who are ultimately providing this money. And that brings me to the second point, because that is one of the reasons why there is significant political opposition to this process in Germany, which you are not seeing to anything like the same degree in any other European country. The AfD, which is opposed to all of these things, which remains strongly opposed to German policy over Ukraine and Russia, for example, much more so than, say, Marine Le Pen's Front National in France, or obviously Meloni in Italy, or anything like that. They are now Germany's biggest party. And what has just happened to Volkswagen is inevitably going to strengthen them. It is going to give further traction to their arguments. And we have important elections coming in Germany, regional elections coming in the autumn. There is now a strong possibility that the AfD might form its first government in one of the Länder. So there is great weight to what you are saying, that ultimately, you know, even in Germany, much of the political class is very complacent by all of this. But they have to be a bit more careful. In fact, they need to be a lot more careful, I would argue, than you would find elsewhere in Europe.
Well, if you put yourselves, I mean, knowing what we know, let me rephrase it, knowing what we know about how the technocrats in Brussels operate. I mean, they're globalists, and we call them globalists for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they're not concerned about their country.
No.
Right? They're globalists. So even the German globalist political class, yes, the money comes from German citizens and German taxpayers, but they don't really view it that way anyway, right? For them, it's about Europe. It's about the EU. It's about being a globalist. It's about being part of that club.
Yes.
So yes, the money is coming from Germany, and it is Germany that's funding the EU. But at the end of the day, they don't feel like they're part of Germany. They're part of the globalist clique, right? So I think that's an important distinction. And as far as the AfD goes, just to wrap up my part of the video, the AfD, what they will do, and what we've been saying for a while now, and I think is a certainty, is they will try to marginalize the AfD, to cancel them, to block them, just like they did in Romania, just like they did to Orban. I mean, we see what's unfolding in Hungary right now. Magyar is, and his party, they are making it so that it's going to be impossible for any opposition to challenge them.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're completely deconstructing everything. They're changing the constitution. They're making it impossible for any Fidesz party official to ever run again.
Yeah.
And if this was done by Orban,
if
these types of things were done by Orban when he was in power, the EU would be going crazy.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's Magyar and his guys, no one's saying anything as to what they're doing. So, I mean, they're going to try these tricks with AfD. There's no doubt about it that they're going to try these tricks with AfD.
Of course they are.
And they might succeed. I mean,
there's a very high probability that they will succeed. I'm not saying that they will fail. Rather, that all I am saying is that it's going to be more difficult in Germany than it would be in Hungary. I mean, in Hungary, what's happening, by the way, you're absolutely correct. I mean, they've changed the constitution to remove the president. I mean, that is an astonishing step to take. I mean, the fact that nobody is talking about it tells you exactly who ultimately is behind this decision. And I mean, they've completely changed the entire leadership of the television and radio systems. I mean, it is an actual purge that is taking place in Hungary. By the way, exactly as we predicted. Yep. Now, Germany is different, and I'll tell you one reason why Germany is different, and that is you're completely correct. There is a very significant part of the German political class that is globalist. I mean, completely globalist in every respect. I mean, the Green Party, I would say, is a globalist
Annalena Habeck,
Ursula herself. Yeah. There's a significant part of the CDU that is globalist. The SPD the Social Democratic Party of Germany, the party that used to represent German workers, the party of Karl Liebknecht of long ago and all of that. They, of course, are also globalists. It's a completely globalist party. Its leadership is that entirely now. But Germany is a complicated country in ways that I don't think people always understand. Firstly, it's much more decentralized than European countries tend to be. When they said it's a federal republic, I mean, it really is a federal republic. And that means that there is much more energy in local politics than there tends to be in other parts of Europe. And, well, there is, I understand, still a part of the CDU, which is, you know, still much closer to the grassroots in Germany. And, of course, the same is equally true of the AfD, maybe more so, in fact. So there are more complicated aspects to this. And in Germany, what happens in the federal, in the states, in the Länder, does have an impact on policy at the center, because the Länder are able to insert their own people into the Bundesrat, the upper house of the German parliament. I mean, it's the German states that basically make up, that who decide the makeup of the federal, of the upper house of the parliament. So that all creates a certain difference in the political electoral dynamics in Germany. So I'm not saying that the globalists are going to win in Europe. Sad to say, the iron rule of politics is that they do win. What I would say that is that in Germany itself, they're going to run into difficulties and problems. There is more opposition to them from the German electorate than there would be in other countries. There are more institutional barriers that are going to be more difficult to overcome. And there is a political force in Germany which is distinctive and very different from the other misnamed populist parties that you have across Europe, which apart from Fidesz, basically, are simply variations of the establishment mainstream, as we saw with Meloni.
Yeah. Well, what did Ursula tell Meloni? We have tools.
We have tools.
When Meloni was acting up, we have tools, she said.
Yes, yes. I mean, this is again, I mean, for Ursula to say that to a German government would be more difficult. Of course, it's not impossible. Let's assume that we have an election in a year's time, which is, by the way, not impossible in Germany, and the AfD wins, and Alice Weidel becomes chancellor. And she's, to be frank, much, much tougher, much more intelligent, in my opinion, than other European dissident leaders are. It's in a conflict between Ursula and Alice Weidel, it's far from clear that it is Alice Weidel, even though she runs Germany, who has the cards. You still have the European Central Bank, which, remember, is based in Frankfurt. There is still large parts of the German political elite who are Europeanists to the core. There is the German Constitutional Court, which is very, very difficult to challenge. In Germany, to some extent, the German Constitutional Court has protected Germany from some of the decisions that have been coming out of Brussels. But ultimately, it is an establishment institution. If Alice Weidel wants to take steps like, say, I'm not saying she's going to do this, but take steps like, say, reopening Nord Stream 2 or Nord Stream, there may be arguments coming back from the EU saying that this contradicts EU law. And in the event that there is a legal battle, it is far from certain that the Constitutional Court would support the decision of the German government. So you see, you have all of these problems. I don't want to suggest that the opposition in Germany is so strong that it must prevail. But I would say that there is likely to be, or there is going to be, a more difficult challenge for the EU centre to face down in Germany than there is likely to be in other places.
Well, we haven't even mentioned the United States either.
No, we haven't, of course.
What does the United States want? What will they tell Ursula? What will they order Ursula to do? At the end of the day, she's just taking orders. So what will they order her to do? What will what will the United States tell Alice Weidel if she were to win? What to do? And there's parts of the United States that support her, which are more libertarian, sovereigntist, I guess you could say, not globalist, maybe, if you want to make that argument. Like Musk is a big supporter of Weidel.
Yeah.
And then there are other parts of the United States, the neocon part, the Pentagon part, which has a significant amount of troops, the Rubios and these guys who will definitely tell Weidel to take a seat and don't cause trouble.
Indeed, and you did not mention the most powerful agency of all, which is, of course, the intelligence communities, which, of course, are very, very heavily integrated in the German intelligence community, which they created. I mean, the German Intelligence Service, the BND, was created basically by the CIA, out of the out of a group of former German army officers, World War II army officers who were involved in intelligence after the Second World War. So it is essentially a creation, an American creation, just saying. So, they are tightly integrated into the Atlantis system. And also large sections of the German media, the Axel Springer media, the left-wing media, also the Der Spiegel, Stern, all of them. So, I mean, I don't want to give the impression that this is going to be a straightforward thing, but Germany's becoming interesting. Let me put it like this. And of course, when I say that Germany's becoming interesting, what is it that the Chinese say? We live in interesting times. These are difficult times for the people of Germany. And Germany is a country which, as you know, I have great affinity and liking of. And I am very, very sorry about that.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. Mm. That's a good point. Germany is becoming interesting. Mm. But, Romania was definitely interesting, a year or two ago. Yes. Yeah. Hungary was very interesting for a while.
Yeah.
Italy was getting interesting. And, and now they're not so interesting anymore, right? Indeed. The globalists managed to put a lid on all of that stuff.
Well, indeed. And they will probably succeed in that in Germany too, which will be very, very hard for the German people. If that happens, then the Germany that I have known for all my life, and I've been traveling to Germany since the 60s. The Germany that will come out at the other end will be a very different place.
Yeah. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, we'll end the video there, the durand.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. Go to Durand Shop, pick up some merch, 26% off summer special, and also check us out on Substack as well. Take care.